you're a California conservative, a libertarian, a moderate Democrat, believe in common sense, or just a sane person, this is the political podcast for you. It's the California Underground Podcast.
What's going on, everybody? Thank you for tuning in to another episode of the California Underground Podcast. Today is pretty on point because I had actually planned on talking about this before, but now that there was a vote as of today, the Appropriations Committee voted, I believe, 7-2 along party lines, obviously Democrats in favor, Republicans opposed. Don't quote me on those numbers. I think it was 7-2, but it may have been something different. That they are going to send the single-payer health care bill to the floor of the Assembly to vote on. Now, there's a lot of steps that it has to go through before it gets to actually be a bill. So there is a lot of kind of consternation that it did pass the appropriations bill. It passed without like really any pushback at all. But at the same time, it's step one in the fact that this is trying to get through. Now, we're going to talk about a bunch of things. We're going to go over sort of the bill. I picked out some of the nitty-gritty stuff that's buried deep in it, so you don't have to kind of look at this entire gobbledygook, because it's a lot of gobbledygook. And as an attorney, they really like to write everything out and make this a huge, huge bill that's going to control a lot of the healthcare industry. I mean, it's going to control everything about the healthcare industry. And then we're going to talk about the breakdown, the financial implications. Then we're going to talk about, obviously, the taxes that are going to go along with it, how bad these taxes are, and probably why Gavin Newsom, or Noodles, as we like to call him here on this program. Yep, I'm wearing my Noodle shirt just for today. Why he might be backing away from this and not going full-throated support for single payer just yet, even though he said he wants to expand Medi-Cal for undocumented citizens, or that's what he called it, undocumented citizens. He doesn't want to support single payer. For some reason, a lot of people are already angry with him that, but this is probably why he probably is kind of trying to distance himself from it. But there's a lot to get to. First time in a while, I've been flying solo on the podcast. This is pretty interesting. I haven't done this in a while. But either way, we're going to jump right into it because there is so much to get to. And I pulled a lot of stuff for you. Obviously, the links are always going to be in the show notes. So if you listen to the audio podcast, there's the show notes. I'll put all the links in there. And I'll try and put them up in the YouTube description as well so you can follow along. Or if you want to go see this for yourself, that I'm not making any of this up. This is all stuff you can look up yourself. And if you feel like you want to put yourself through some sort of misery, you have some sort of masochist mentality where you want to go through and read this entire AB 1400, be my guest. You can go ahead and read it and pull out stuff yourself. But at the end of the day, that's why I did this, so that you can kind of get a better idea. We're going to kind of do like a little bit of a summary. So what I have on the screen right here is the bill highlighted with some different important aspects that I think that everybody really needs to kind of know. We're going to go over also well as the bill analysis, which talks about the financials. And so this is the introduction portion where it says the legislator finds and declares, and it talks about why it believes that it needs to introduce this bill, correct? So the first thing I pulled out, to address the fiscal crisis facing the healthcare system and the state, and to ensure Californians get the healthcare they need, comprehensive healthcare coverage needs to be provided. Billions of dollars that could be spent on providing equal access to healthcare are wasted on administrative costs necessary in a multi-payer healthcare system. Resources and costs spent on administration would be dramatically reduced in a single-payer system, allowing healthcare professionals and hospitals to focus on patient care instead. Right off the bat, I have a problem with that one point, which is if you think that the government has ever taken taxpayer money and made things more efficient, I would love to hear an example. You can always email me at californiaunderground@protonmail.com. I'd love to hear some sort of example of where the government, and it can be anywhere in the country, where the government has taken your taxpayer money and made things more efficient and cheaper, by that matter. You'll be hard pressed to find one, that's for sure. So basically, already the legislator is saying, hey, we believe if we're going to be spending billions of dollars on healthcare every year, why not just give it all to the government and we can do a better job with it? Never really happens. Great idea, never really happens. Dramatically reduced in a single payer system. I doubt that there would be reduced costs in administration and so. And when it comes to allowing healthcare professionals and hospitals to focus on patient care instead, I've heard from a lot of doctors and a lot of doctors who want to get out of the profession of being a doctor because of the fact that they have to deal with a lot of this bureaucracy, especially when the Obamacare passed, the Affordable Health Care, the Affordable Care Act passed. They had to deal with a lot of more negotiation, dealing with these issues, dealing with the government. And it became so much of a headache that a lot of these doctors have just kind of stopped being doctors because the medical profession is so much more of a pain to deal with insurance companies. Then you have to deal with the government. They have to deal with Medicare. And then I've always heard complaints from doctors about how they don't want to deal with Medicare or Medicaid or all that stuff because it's such a pain. So the fact that they're saying, oh, let the government handle it and we'll allow you to focus on patient care instead. Doubtful. Again, great idea. I don't think it's going to work. So skipping over all the gobbledygook, and I like to call it the gobbledygook because it's a lot of gobbledygook. It's a lot of stuff that doesn't really, you don't really need to know. I mean, like these are all definitions. You don't need to know all that stuff. However, there is one definition that is pretty important. Resident means an individual whose primary place of abode is in this state. Now, this is important. Keep this definition in mind. Without regard to the individual's immigration status, who meets the California residence requirements adopted by the board pursuant to subdivision K of section 10610. The board shall be guided by the principles and requirements set forth in the Medi-Cal program under Article 7, Chapter 2 of Subdivision 1, blah, blah, blah. So resident in their mind means anyone whose primary place of abode, meaning where you live, is in this state without regard to individual's immigration status, which is right there in black and white. This is what a lot of people feared, is that if undocumented citizens can take advantage of taxpayer funded single payer health care, that could create a problem with a lot of maybe that idea of like a magnet for people in Central America to come here, because they know if they get here, you're provided pretty much free healthcare. You don't have to worry about it. You're going to get healthcare. That's one magnet that a lot of people are worried about when it comes to single payer like this. And the bill does go on to say that there should be no discrimination based on immigration status, which we'll get to. CalCare shall be governed by an executive board known as the CalCare Board, consisting of 9 voting members who are residents of California. Remember, residence is sort of a loose term. As long as you live in California, you're a resident. The CalCare Board shall be an independent public entity not affiliated with an agency or department of the board. The members of the board, 5 shall be appointed by the governor, 2 shall be appointed by the Senate Committee on Rules, and 2 shall be appointed by the Speaker of the Assembly. The Secretary of California Health and Human Services or the Secretary's designee shall serve as a non-voting ex officio member of the board. Appointments by the governor shall be subject to confirmation by the Senate, which, you know, when you have a supermajority in the Senate and you have a Democratic governor, basically anybody can get in. Don't worry. Any lackey or any sort of crony lobbyist can definitely get in when the Democrats have control of the Senate and the governor. A member of the board may continue to serve until the appointment and qualification of the member's successor. Vacancy shall be filled by appointment for the unexpired term. The board shall elect the chairperson on annual basis. Now, this is where I want to point out something interesting, because follow the money. Always follow the money. Appointments to the board shall be made as follows. 2 healthcare professionals who practice medicine, 1 registered nurse, sounds good so far, 1 public health professional, good, 1 mental health professional, sure, 1 member with an institutional provider background, also good, 1 representative of a not-for-profit organization that advocates for individuals who use healthcare in California, and then 1 representative of a labor organization. Yeah, 1 representative of a labor organization. Now, it's like that old song you saw on Sesame Street, like one of these things is not like the other. A labor organization. Why would you need someone from a labor organization? I guess to maybe try and advocate on behalf of employees, but everyone here has some sort of background in healthcare. And then all of a sudden you throw in 1 representative of a labor organization. Now, we know from Lorena Gonzalez, members like her, that the unions in California have a very, very strong grip on politicians, especially Democratic politicians, because the cycle is continuous, whereby they give jobs or they give a lot of handouts and contracts to a lot of labor unions. The labor unions then raise dues, and then they take those dues and then they turn around and donate them to Democratic politicians. And the cycle never ends. So why would you think a representative of a labor organization would have to be on a board regarding healthcare? Probably because when you're talking about spending billions and billions and billions of dollars, hundreds of billions of dollars, the labor unions are not going to sit idly by and not get some sort of slice of the pie. In terms of the old Godfather movie, I need to wet my beak a little bit. So keep going down, keep going down, keep going down. More gobbledygook. This was the advisory board, and now it's two representatives of organized labor and at least one representing registered nurses. Okay, so at least that's a little bit more connected to healthcare. But again, now labor gets two seats at the board. Keep going down. We'll keep going down. Sorry, this is a lot to get through. So a lot of this is just kind of going on and going on. A lot of stuff that's not really, like, if you want to dive into this, be my guest. I read through it and I was able to peruse it pretty well, and it doesn't, nothing really stood out to me. It's a lot of kind of administrative stuff. All right, so we get to eligibility and enrollment. Now, remember that definition, every resident, and a resident of California is what? Somebody who has their principal place of abode or principal abode here in California, regardless of immigration status, meaning as long as you live in California, as long as your primary address and where you live is here in California, you qualify for this single payer healthcare system. So eligibility, first, right off the bat, every resident, so that's everybody, everybody who lives in California of the state shall be eligible and entitled to roll as a member of CalCare. That's their fancy name, CalCare. It's going to be called CalCare. Another interesting point is that a college, university, or other institution of higher education in the state may purchase coverage under CalCare for a student or student's dependent who is not a resident of the state. Again, it's not a big deal. I mean, there's a lot of students who come in from out of state who now all of a sudden are going to be getting free health care for just being here in California. And they may not even stay in California. They may go to school in California, then they leave. And as we know, students don't really contribute a lot in taxes. If anything, they usually are the ones getting the refunds every year because they don't make enough money. So they'll be taking free healthcare from the system, but at the end of the day, they won't be giving money back into the system as they should be, even if they're not technically a resident of the state. So you could be from out of state, and someone who's a dependent on that student can get free healthcare under this single payer healthcare. So again, you don't, that's another loophole. If you want to get healthcare, you can just come to California. Now, I don't know if that's really going to make a big difference, because you can stay on your parents' health insurance until you're 26 under Obamacare. But again, if you're a student, and regardless of whether or not you are a resident, you will get eligibility for free healthcare under the single payer system. All residents of the state, no matter what their sex, race, color, religion, ancestry, national origin, disability, age, previous or existing mental condition, genetic information, marital status, familial status, military or veteran status, sexual orientation, gender identity or expression, pregnancy-related medical condition, including termination of pregnancy, citizenship, primary language, or immigration status, are entitled to full and equal accommodations, advantages, facilities, privileges, or services in all healthcare providers participating in CalCare. Basically, they're not going to discriminate based on anything, which is fine. Sure. I mean, we shouldn't be discriminating based on anything, but that's the bigger issue, is how much this is going to cost when people who come here who are not citizens, or whether they're not residents, whether they're students or they just came here, they'll still have the opportunity to get access to this. Then it talks about all the additional healthcare items and services. I mean, it's all your basic stuff. I was trying to see if there was anything they tried to squeeze in here. They basically covered the gamut on all of this. Again, a lot of these bills, because they have to go so in depth, they list as much as possible. And then they always add like the savings clause where they can say, oh, well, anything else the board determines. at the end of the day. So that does give a lot of discretion to this board that they can start to add stuff to this after the fact. A healthcare provider shall enter into a participation agreement with the board to qualify as a participating provider under CalCare. A participation agreement between the board and a healthcare provider shall include provisions for at least the following as applicable to each provider. Healthcare items and services to members shall be furnished by the provider without discrimination as required by Section 100.621. This paragraph does not require the provision of a type of class or class of healthcare items or services that are outside the scope of the provider's normal practice. Charge shall not be made to a member for a covered healthcare item or service other than for payment authorized by this title. The provider shall follow the policies, blah, blah, blah. Keep going. Wading through the gobbledygook here. So, and I'm not lying to you. I went through this whole thing. I perused this entire thing and I pulled out some of the most important stuff that you need to see. All right. Okay, this is talking about payment. Not really that interesting. I thought it'd be a little bit more interesting. There was one other thing that I want to make up that I want to talk about, but I have to get through all of this because it's a lot to get through. The board shall engage in good faith negotiations with healthcare providers representatives under Chapter 8 to determine rates of fee for service payment for healthcare items and services furnished under CalCare. So, the board is going to negotiate with providers. Now, when the government gets involved in any sort of providing of services, have you in your life seen that those services go down or do they end up going up? Now, they say they're going to release the schedule as to what those fees can be. But who's to say if the money is guaranteed? Now, again, this is only past the Appropriations Committee, meaning it goes to the Assembly floor, meaning they get to vote on it, which means it goes over the Senate and the Senate makes revisions and then it goes back to the Assembly and they either accept them or they add more revisions. So this can bounce back and forth plenty of times. Have you ever seen in any time where the government gets involved with any sort of industry and they start to negotiate on your behalf, as opposed to you as a consumer, just going to a private business and going, hi, I'd like to buy your services. How much is it? Okay, I'm competing for this consumer. Therefore, I'm going to charge a pretty reasonable rate and I'm going to charge some sort of competitive rate because I believe I'm better. But when you get the government involved and the government pays and foots the bill for everything, do you believe it goes up or it goes down? In my lifetime, I've only seen government get involved and things go up. So they are going to try and do these good negotiations. I doubt that these negotiations will, you know, and a lot of times healthcare providers, they may release a schedule. I'll keep this in mind. This is another problem. They may release a schedule where they say, this is what we believe fees and costs are going to be. And this is what you're going to have to agree to if you want to be a part of this program. Private entities or providers, such as a Kaiser or a Sharp or something like that, may push back and say, well, no, that's not how much it costs. And you're really kind of cutting us off at the knees here. And then they kind of go back and forth. So they may undercut them or they may overcharge them. And in reality, it's that third party mentality where if there's a third party negotiating for your healthcare on your behalf, you don't get to be in those negotiations. You don't get to say, well, I only want this amount of healthcare. Or I don't need that much health, or maybe I have a pre-existing condition, so I need to get more. You don't get to negotiate that with your insurance company or your provider. Instead, you're letting the government do it for you, which you're over here. You're not even really a thought because you're not a party to this negotiation. Instead, it's the government that is sitting on hundreds of billions of dollars and these providers who want access to those hundreds of billions of dollars. And inevitably, I feel like either greed or malfeasance always comes into play and it never ends well. Let's see. Keep going. Wading through the gobbledygook. That should be the name of this episode, is Wading Through the Gobbledygook, because that's what this is right now. The CalCare Trust Fund, we're going to come back to what this CalCare Trust Fund is and how they're going to fund it, is hereby created in the state treasury for the purposes of this title to be administered by the CalCare Board. Notwithstanding section 13340, all monies in the fund shall be continuously appropriated without regard to fiscal year for the purposes of this title. Any monies in the fund that are unexpended or unencumbered at the end of the fiscal year may be carried forward to the next succeeding fiscal year. The way I read this is that every year you have to spend the money, meaning you have to find something to spend it on. You don't get to set, you should be appropriating it to something. Now, somehow, I don't know how, if you're supposed to appropriate it all the time, if you have any unexpended money or you don't have any spent money, you can carry it over to the next year. That means that you still have to spend all the money next year, but if you have any left over, you get to carry it over to the next year. It sounds like they want you to spend all the money every year and empty the entire trust fund every year, and then you're probably not likely going to carry over a lot of money. I would doubt that they're going to carry over any money because, as we've just been saying, none of this is really efficient and none of it will be as efficient as they think it's going to be. And even though they released this number of what the annual budget or annual number is going to be, I don't think it's going to be anywhere close to that. It'll probably be a lot more than that. They probably did some fancy tap dancing with the numbers to make it look better than it is. A lot of people are saying, oh, well, it looks like we'd be spending less on healthcare if we all went to single payer. Sure, there's probably some fancy accounting done there to make it look better. But in terms of this specific section, it sounds like they have to spend all the money every year. And that means that there's never going to be a surplus or there's never going to be amount of money that they can roll over every year and go, well, we have an extra amount of money. We're not going to, maybe we lower taxes for a year because we have so much money left over. They got to spend the money. Remember, follow the money. There's going to be a lot of people who are going to have their hands in this honeypot. There's going to be a lot of pigs at the trough when it comes to this healthcare single payer plan. All right, so that's the text of the bill. I did want to go over what is called a bill analysis. So this is usually what they release. The legislative analyst office will kind of release this 2 or 3 page summary, so you don't have to go through 10 or 15 pages of the gobbledygook. And you can sit down and kind of get a better idea. And this is straight from the Assembly Legislative Analyst. Well, I don't know why I can say it. Analyst analysis. This just kind of goes over what they were saying before, what the whole point of it was. But I want to get down to the fiscal effect. This is from the bill analysis. It says the authors of the PERI study estimated that through implementation of SB 562, overall costs of providing SB 5, it was like a previous bill that they tried to introduce. You know, they've been trying to do single payer for like a long time. Like if you put in single payer California, you'll see articles dating back to like 2012. So this is not the first time they've taken a crack at it. So SB 562, overall costs of providing full health care coverage to all Californians could fall by about 18% relative to spending levels under the existing system. On the whole, the PERI analysis predicted that although SB 562's single payer system would be expensive, its cost and taxes would ultimately be lower than what Californians were paying to private insurers. The overall annual cost of this single payer system for California would be $331 billion as of 2017, equivalent to $356.5 billion in 2021. So that's the number they're saying. It's going to cost $356.5 billion in 2021 dollars. Now, keep in mind, I think the annual budget for California is only around $200 billion. So it's not like this huge... I don't know where they get this idea that they have all this money laying around. Another thing that I always find interesting is they may say, sure, if you give the government all of this money, it will cost less because we won't be spending as much. And that the citizens may not be spending as much to private insurers. The problem with that, though, is you've taken away effectively the choice of the people to spend that money. So you could spend more money if you need to spend more money on health insurance. If you want the Cadillac of health insurance, you can spend the Cadillac on health insurance. If you don't want to spend the Cadillac and you want to buy the cheapest health insurance, you can buy the cheapest health insurance. So this number is kind of like misleading in the sense that they say, well, yeah, if we provide everybody with a healthcare plan, it's going to cost this amount of money. That's a pie in the sky sort of number because you're assuming that everyone's going to be getting the same healthcare access or that everyone's going to stick to that amount of money. You're also keeping this number as to how many people are here in California at this time. There are going to be people are leaving, but like I've said before, when it comes to being a magnet for any sort of illegal immigration or people who want to come to a certain state in America, they're going to come to the state where they can get free healthcare. And you're not accounting for what's going to happen there. So it's sort of a pie in the sky number to say it's $356.5 billion right now in 2021 dollars. But you're also not assuming that people don't have that choice anymore to pay for the health insurance that they want. And it's going to cost more. It's inevitably always going to cost more. You can sit here and say, this is our estimate. But when it comes to the government, it always ends up costing more. According to the author, the U.S. healthcare system is complex, fragmented, multi-payer system that still leaves wide gaps in coverages. Blah, blah, blah. The highest uninsured rates will be among undocumented Californians, 65%, and those eligible only for insurance through covered California, 28%. And this is talking about right now, according to who's covered it and who's not. On January 10th, 2022, Governor Newsom released the proposed 2022-2023 budget, which includes funding to expand Medi-Cal to all income-eligible Californians. So this is what I mentioned before, is that Noodles has said that he's in favor of a single payer, but he hasn't gone so far as to really push for a single payer. And now it seems like he's kind of backing away from the single payer. So this bill's making its way through the assembly, correct? This is the single payer proposal. Governor Noodles wants to propose that they expand Medi-Cal to income eligible Californians. That's a different proposal than what's going on here. That's not like, this is CalCare's the single payer. He wants to expand Medi-Cal. So there are two different proposals that are going on right now. He says he just wants to expand Medi-Cal to people who are eligible for it. This bill will make it so it's single payer and everybody has to kind of sign up for government healthcare. We're going to talk about that in a little bit about why he might be backing away from it. But just to kind of note that that's his proposal, is that he wants this and the assembly is now pushing this. ACA, this is the related constitutional amendment. Now, constitutional amendments do have to be voted on by the people. So when you propose a constitutional amendment, especially like this, it has to be approved by the people. And we'll look at the text of that where it says it does have to propose to the people. ACA, which is a constitutional amendment, imposes the following taxes on businesses: annual excise tax of 2.3 of gross receipts above $2 million, payroll tax of 1.25 for companies with at least 50 employees, payroll tax of 1% for employees with wages exceeding $49,900 per year. ACA 11 also includes a series of individual income tax increases starting with a 0.5 levy percent on income over $149,000 $509,509,000 per year, and ending at 2.5 marginal income tax for income over $2.48 million per year with annual adjustment for inflation based on the California Consumer Price Index, and which can be suspended by the legislature. Now, that's something we're going to dive into that a little bit more, because that's pretty scary. That's what should scare everybody about this, is that it's great, it's this pie in the sky idea, but even people who think that they're going to get away with this and not have to pay more in taxes, it turns out you are probably going to end up paying more in taxes. If you think, well, I'll just let the rich people pay for it. In this case, everyone's going to be paying for it. And that's the other thing I'm trying to wrap my head around right now is if this is so much more affordable and taxpayers are saving more money, why the need to impose all of these taxes? I guess to initially fund it, but it, you know, why raise all these taxes every year to make it more expensive for people to live? ACA also authorizes the legislature, upon economic analysis, determining insufficient amounts to fund CalCare, to increase any or all of these tax rates as specified. ACA 11 is pending referral in the Assembly Rules Committee. That's also very scary. Let me take a drink here real quick. What the bill would do, what ACA would do, is it would allow for them to raise taxes just to fund this without any sort of going back to the people anymore. It would just be a simple majority. I mean, it could be 51% of the legislature. Doesn't have to be a super majority anymore. Let's see, finish this up. All right, let's go to the next thing, which is, I want to go back and add to stream. Oop, what am I doing here? I've never done this really before, so here we go. Share screen. I want to share this next screen. Have to do this. Doing this on the fly. There we go. All right. This is the next thing I want to talk about, which is the actual money behind it. This is ACA. So, Assembly Constitutional Amendment, a resolution to propose to the people of the state of California an amendment to the Constitution of the state. This is to fund the CalCare Trust Fund, meaning before they can even get CalCare off the ground, it has to be linked to this, because without the funding, it's not going to really do anything. You can pass anything, but if it's not funded, you can't do anything with the program. And this is a lot shorter than the actual bill. And this talks about, and we'll talk more about the taxes. This is really the breakdown. And there's a good article we're going to talk about that really breaks it down in specific language as to what is going on here. Let's see. Notwithstanding the law, that's not what I was looking for. Notwithstanding Section 3 of Article 13A, or any provision of the Constitution, upon economic analysis determining insufficient amounts in the CalCare Trust Fund, established pursuant to Section 2 for the funding of comprehensive universal single-payer healthcare coverage, a healthcare cost control system, and necessary reserves, a statute may be passed to increase any or all of the tax rates imposed pursuant to this section by an act approved by a majority vote of the entire membership of each of the two houses. Approved by a majority vote, not a supermajority, not two-thirds. We're talking about that all they have to do from here, if this is approved, from here on for eternity, that if they're, for some reason, they're running out of money in that CalCare Trust Fund, they can just continually raise taxes every single year. They can say, oh, we don't have enough money. We need to raise taxes. We need to raise taxes here. So from here on eternity, they've given themselves the ability to raise taxes for this plan on a simple majority, not a super majority. So we, you know how I've always talked about the first step to kind of turning around California is we have to get rid of the Democratic supermajority in our legislature. Now, that wouldn't be enough under this plan. Even if we got rid of the Democratic supermajority, which would make it harder for them to get these supermajority items passed and these tax issues passed, this means it's just a simple majority. I mean, they can just 51 people or 51% of the people can just vote and say we need to raise the taxes. That's the scariest thing. Now, I'm going to go back to this other page, because want to switch this out again. We're going to go back to this article that I have pulled out for you from the Tax Foundation, who did a really good breakdown of what is going on here. And I think that's important for us to kind of read and go over. Here we go. A proposed constitutional amendment, ACA 11, which we talked about, would increase taxes by $12,250 per household, roughly doubling the state's already high tax collections to fund a first in the nation single-payer healthcare system. The top marginal rate on wage income runs soar to 18.05% nationally, and the median top marginal rate is 5.3%. And the state would adopt a new 2.3% of gross receipts tax at a rate more than three times that of the country's highest current pure GRT. That's terrifying. Right there, that opening paragraph should be the most terrifying thing you've heard when it comes. California loves to spend and get your taxes. Love it, California. There's no tax that they don't think is too high. The new taxes would take three forms. Surtaxes atop the current individual income tax structure beginning at $149,509 in income. A graduated rate payroll system with the top rate kicking in for employers with more than $49,990 in annual income. And a gross receipts tax of 2.3%, excluding the first $2 million of business income. Okay. Now, let's dive into the details, why this is really so scary. And he compares, in Ohio, for instance, there is a 0.26% gross receipts tax adopted to replace the state's corporate income tax. In California, by contrast, a 2.3% gross receipts tax, almost nine times Ohio's rate, would be imposed in addition to a tangible property taxes and an 8.84% corporate income tax. And an aggressive one at that, the only state-level corporate income tax in the country with a worldwide tax base. So they're comparing. Let's talk about, let's step back here and talk about what gross receipt tax are. He goes into a little bit more about what gross receipts tax are. Gross receipts means what you get. So there's this idea, there's the gross and there's the net. You get a gross revenue and you get your net revenue. Meaning as a business, if you took all the money you get, that's your gross. That's everything that you get, everything that comes through your cash register, everything that comes through your credit card processor, that's your gross. Now the net is what happens, what you get after you spend business expenditures, such as payroll, supplies, utilities, keeping the lights on, marketing. Basically, all those expenditures that businesses get to write off because they say, well, it costs this much to do business. You shouldn't tax me on that stuff. So usually you get taxed on your net. Here in California, what they're proposing is that it would be a 2.3% gross receipts, meaning they're going to tax based on what you get already. And if you have really small profit margins, this could actually exceed the amount of your profit margins, making it shockingly, I mean, you don't have to be an economist to figure this out. It will make it even harder for you to do business here in California. And a lot of businesses, probably a lot of corporations will probably get up and just go, I'm not going to do this anymore. Screw this. I'm not making a profit here. So I'm out of here. So that's one way to really kill the economy here in California. And then he talks about this payroll tax. Now, payroll tax exempts employers with fewer than 50 resident employees, punishing small businesses for expanding and creating a meaningful tax cliff. We've seen this before. We've seen this with the Obamacare issue, is that you don't have to use Obamacare. You're not required to implement some sort of healthcare program until you hit a threshold of amount of employees. So a lot of people said what that would do was stifle economic growth, because at a certain point you're going to go, well, I can't afford, if I go one more employee over, now all of a sudden I got this huge healthcare bill and I got to provide healthcare to my employees based on this law. That's a disincentive for businesses to grow. So this is his oversimplified hypothetical. He says, imagine a company with 49 employees making $80,000 each. At 49 employees, the company has no payroll tax burden. Hiring one additional employee generates a tax bill of $90,000, more than the employee's actual salary. So now that business would likely just sit there and go, well, I can't hire more. I can't grow. I can't take on new contracts because I can't grow as much as I want to, stifling economic growth. And they don't really seem to see the problem with this. I see the problem with this. That is, you're disincentivizing businesses to be here and businesses to grow here. And it's no wonder why you saw businesses like Tesla, and you're seeing businesses like even Google is moving a lot to Austin. Oracle is out. They've moved out of the state as well. So a lot of these big companies, they keep getting slammed with tax after tax after tax. They're moving out. Here he talks about the gross receipts. They're widely understood as extremely disruptive and inequitable taxes because they're imposed on businesses without regard to their profit margins. For low-margin businesses like supermarkets, 2.3% of gross receipts may literally exceed current profits even if the company is doing well. For instance, Kroger's profit margins dipped to 0.75% in late 2020. Remember, Elizabeth Warren said that Kroger, big evil Kroger, is making all this money and all this profit, and they're not sharing the wealth. And it's not fair. They're the ones who are really stoking inflation, why you pay more at the grocery store, remember? Even though their gross profit margins, or their profit margins last year, were 0.75%. And that historically, their profit margins have been 1.75%, almost a full percentage point lower. These taxes are even worse for businesses posting losses, including startups that haven't turned profitable yet, because they're taxed on their receipts even if their expenditures exceed revenues. For startups, a high rate gross receipts could be disastrous. So again, let's dive into this. You start a business. You spend a lot of money to get that business going. You make a certain amount of money that year. Now you don't post a profit because you spend a lot of money. You're basically in the red at the end of the first year, which is normal. A lot of businesses do that. They don't end the year with more money than they started with. And that's because you're growing, because you're spending money on expenditures. Maybe you hired employees because congratulations, you're doing so well, you can hire employees. But at the end of the year, you didn't post any real big profits. You're still kind of struggling to get through to the next year. California basically wants to say, I don't care if you spent more to get your business going. How much did you make? And you can say, well, we made $100,000 this year. They're still going to tax you. They're still going to tax you and say, I don't care if you don't have the money and you don't have that extra money laying around to pay for the taxes. You're going to have to pay it because that's what they're asking for when it comes to gross tax receipts. This is even scarier for families. So while California state income tax avoids a marriage penalty for most filers by doubling bracket WIS, there's already an additional 1% above $1 million, which is not adjusted. The new surtaxes do not. So these are the income surtaxes that are going to be added on. The $149,509 kick-in of the 0.5% tax applies to individual or household income equally. Used to be that there was sort of an exemption. If you were married, the numbers were a little bit different because it's a combined household. Here, as long as the whole household makes basically $150,000, over $150,000, you're going to be subject to this new surtax, which for a lot of people in California is pretty reasonable. That's a lot of people in California as a household who make $150,000. I mean, you're really only talking about two people making what, $75,000 a year, $80,000 a year, which is not that crazy to think in a lot of places in California. Guess what? You're going to be paying more in your income taxes. Taxpayers earning less than $50,000 would face, inclusive of the new payroll tax, double-digit marginal tax rates. That's right, because usually under $50,000, you don't spend or you don't get taxed, right? But now, even under this, you're still going to get taxed at a certain amount. Then he talks about this bracket kick-in if you're single. So even under all the way down to like $9,000, you're going to get taxed at 3.25% of your income. So these are all the different taxes. You can look this up. I'm going to post the links to it. And we talked about this as well. that a simple majority could basically just continue to raise all of these taxes whenever they need to. And that's basically it for the article. So, and the last thing I want to get to, and then if you have any questions or anybody wants to bring up something in the chat, we can certainly do that. But I want to go back to this right over here. Here we go. This is the article I was talking about. This is from CalMatters, which says Newsom backs away from single-payer healthcare pledge. Talks about, he said, I campaign on universal healthcare, Newsom said a day later, we're delivering that. While running for governor in 2018, Newsom pledged to create a single-payer system for California, making the state the sole supplier of coverage. Quote, I'm tired of politicians saying they would support single-payer, but it's too soon, too expensive, or someone else's problem, Newsom said during a campaign. And that pledge won the support of single-payer advocates. Nurses trust Newsom. However, once elected, Newsom did virtually nothing to implement the promise. Instead, as the state finances allowed, he extended Medi-Cal coverage incrementally to undocumented immigrants and others lacking private or public coverage. Along with mandates and subsidies from Obamacare, state actions eventually raised health coverage to 94% of Californians, and Newsom's latest extension to undocumented adults would make it, at least on paper, 100%. So I guess that's where he's going with this, is that everyone would have health care under his plan. Newsom gets a bit testy when reporters ask him about his 2018 pledge. As he was introducing his budget this month, the state assembly was beginning to move with single payer, which we've just gone into excruciating detail. I think that the ideal system is a single payer system, Newsom said. I've been consistent with that for well over a decade. The difference here is when you are in a position of responsibility, you've got to apply, you've got to manifest the ideal. This is hard work. It's one thing to say it, it's another to do it. And with respect, there are many different pathways to achieve that goal. Nurses, union, and other single-payer advocates aren't satisfied. So we want to be absolutely clear, and this is from Alyssa Kang, the single-payer advocate. This is a flip-flop from a governor who said, I'm tired of politicians saying they support single-payer, but it's too soon, too expensive for someone else's problem. This is absolutely unacceptable, and he cannot be allowed to have it both ways. The differences between universal coverage and single-payer are more than semantic. The former includes a wide variety of public and private health insurance plans, many of which have coverage limits and patient co-pays, while the latter would provide unlimited free benefits, out-of-pocket costs, much like Great Britain's national health system, which if you ask a lot of people in Britain, they're not crazy about it. And a lot of people in Canada aren't really crazy about it either. With massive opposition from employers, much of the medical industry, chances for complete approval of the package are iffy at best, and it doesn't appear that Newsom will lift a finger to help it. He's clearly content to settle for universal health care or universal coverage. So why, in 2022, why is that important to understand why Noodles is backing away from the single payer and he doesn't want to have anything to do with it? Because I think he doesn't want to see the tax raises. He doesn't want to be linked. I mean, we just talked about those tax hikes, and those are pretty substantial. And I don't think he wants to be linked to that. I don't think after a pandemic, people getting back on their feet, I don't think he wants to be kind of tied at the hip to a lot of those tax increases. I don't think he wants to. He did face a recall yet last year. So no matter, even if he says 60% of people voted to keep him there, it doesn't necessarily translate that in 2022, he's got a smooth sailing ride. I mean, there were millions of people who showed up to recall him. There are a lot of people who are angry with him. There's people who probably voted to keep him because they didn't want the so-called Trump candidate when it comes to Larry Elder. So that's a different race. Now, if you don't have a Larry Elder, which you're not going to have this year, it changes things because you may have an opponent who is a little bit more, let's say, moderate on a lot of stances that could pull away a lot of those disgruntled Democrats who may have held their tongue or held their nose and voted to keep Newsom last year. But this year, things may be different. So he may be trying to step away from the single payer because he knows how bad it is. Now, if he's saying on the campaign trail and he's saying all this time that I believe that single payer is the ideal, why doesn't he support this? This might have the best chance to get through. And the fact that he's not shows you that he probably believes it's a big dud as well. And it does have to go to the people. Newsom probably won't support it if it has to go to the people. And it does require a certain amount of voters. I believe it has to be 2/3 threshold for the voters to approve it. So it does have a steep uphill climb. Now, it's scary that this is even getting through or trying to get through. This isn't the first time single-payer healthcare has tried to get through. What's the moral of the story here? The moral of the story is that if you don't like this crazy legislation that is continually being pushed here in California, stuff like single-payer that would take over the entire healthcare system and increase your taxes almost by double, by your state taxes by double, then you have to start focusing on changing the legislature and getting rid of the supermajority. That's step one that you have to focus on, and we have to focus on, is get rid of that Democratic supermajority so this doesn't ever happen again. What are my political predictions for this? I believe that it will probably make it through the assembly. The assembly will vote on it. Senate will go through it. It will probably go to the people. I think the people will likely vote it down because after a pandemic, I don't think they want to see more taxes being raised. I think there'll be a good amount of push from PACs and super PACs, and a lot of businesses are going to dump money into this to campaign against it. I think if they can successfully make the case that you're going to raise your taxes, they'll push enough against this that people don't want to pay more in taxes. As much as single payer sounds like a fantastic idea to some people, I don't think it sounds like a fantastic idea, but that's just me personally. I think it will probably fail. It won't get the funding, and then that's the end of it. It'll be done. And without the funding, it can't really go anywhere. And without Newsom backing it, especially in an election year and tying himself to a single payer, I don't think a single payer would actually come to fruition. That doesn't mean to sit back and do nothing. It doesn't mean to sit back and just say, okay, well, it's not going to go anywhere, so why do I care? It doesn't mean you have to voice your opposition. It doesn't mean even if you're in a Democratic district, you should still voice your opposition to this and let them know that this is expensive, that you're not a fan of the raising of the taxes, you're afraid of the economic fallout on businesses and small businesses. If you're a small business owner, how much that's going to cost? I'm a small business owner. This wants to tax business to business transactions. If you're working with businesses and not with consumers directly, they're going to start taxing that. A lot of this is bad news for the economy of California, especially recovering after a pandemic. This is not good. This is pretty awful. So with that said, that's the breakdown of what's going on with the healthcare law. Now, it did pass the appropriations. It's going to go to a vote next week in the assembly. Then after it passes the assembly, it's going to go over the Senate. They're going to deliberate on it. They may make some changes and they'll send it back, and it goes back and forth. ACA is linked to it, though. The ACA 11 is linked to it. And once that happens, it's going to have to be put out to the people. So it's still alive and well. It's got a rough road ahead of it. Even in California, single payer has a rough road ahead of it. And I think there'll be a lot of people who are probably going to say no to it. And now you know. Now you can educate people and you can say, this is why you should be against the single payer, why it's going to be expensive, why it's going to hurt the economy. And that's basically it. Because the most important thing is that you want to be educated about this stuff. So with that said, thank you for tuning in. As always, every Wednesday live on Instagram, we do Coffee and California Politics. We do the podcast usually live on Thursdays at 8 p.m. Today, this week was a little bit of a abnormality. We're going to be back to the normal schedule next week. A lot of events coming up, a lot of stuff. 2022 is going to be a big year. So thank you again for tuning in. Like, share, subscribe, do all that. Spread the word and let more people know about the podcast. And I will see you on the next one. Later.
thank you for listening to another episode of California Underground. If you like what you heard, remember to subscribe, like, and review it, and follow California Underground on social media for updates as to when new episodes are available.